Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, hope on the front lines has all but evaporated for Iraq's Christians as they face mounting violence and economic hardship. We speak to one of the country's beleaguered bishops and to a church agency working to assist Christians in need. And minding the planet Earth. Pope Benedict calls on industrialized nations to do more to protect the environment, while an environmental activist cardinal warns people to get their act together to protect the planet if it's not already too late. There's one common denominator of Christian churches. It has to be hope. But in at least one of the countries of the world, that hope is fast running out, if it's not gone already. Since the overthrow of Saddam Hussein in 2003 and the countrywide violence that ensued, Iraq's dwindling Christian community has been targeted by extremists and crooks who've used kidnapping and extortion, killings and bombings, to finance their arsenals and rid the predominantly Muslim nation of the small Christian presence. Christians have fled the violence in droves, and even more want to leave, following a deadly series of attacks on seven Baghdad churches in July that left dozens dead or injured. Some 750,000 Christians have fled the country over the last decade, decimating the number of Christians in Iraq. Chris Altieri tells us more.
A lack of economic opportunity and inadequate services have encouraged many Christians to leave, while others have abandoned their ancient homeland because of ongoing violence. Chaldean Archbishop Louis Sacco of Kirkuk in northern Iraq told us that despite their best efforts, government and the police have yet to bring the Christian security situation under control. The Archbishop went on to say that Christians are generally being attacked not because they are Christian, but because they are seen to be defenseless.
We are for coexistence between all the groups, and also for the culture of peace and also dialogue.
As government agencies seek to improve, Archbishop Sacco is seizing the moment as one for civil society and religious leaders of every confession to come together in search of concrete ways to serve the common good and build a future for their country.
So we have to forgive each other and to start a new life and with new relations with each other.
Archbishop Sacco is calling on Western countries to pressure Iraqi political groups to reconcile and to try to reduce conflict and restore law and order. Fewer than 400,000 Christians remain in Iraq, where the church has been present since the first century and traces its origins to St. Thomas the Apostle. I'm Chris Altieri.
Aid to the Church in Needs, John Pontifex, told Irene Lagan that Iraqi Christians are demoralized and see little hope for a better future.
The problem for the church in Iraq is that it really does now face the final showdown as to whether it will survive in the long term. It, for many, many years now, in the years since the fall of Saddam, what we've seen is the church beginning to decline. There have been attacks against it. But for a long period of time, the church remained very robust. Now it seems that the opportunities they were looking for in order to strengthen their position and bolster their hopes for the future have all disappeared. And so the situation is one of marked lack of confidence.
Now, the attacks against Christians, are they increased in number, worsening in severity, a combination of the two? And is it a combination of just lawlessness? Why are Christians being so targeted?
The main reason is not because of their religion. We're not seeing people being attacked because of the faith they profess. They're being attacked because they do not have a militia. They do not have access to a militia of any description. And this means that they are easy targets. And what underlies that is a sense in which Christians are seen to be nobody in society, that nobody will spring to their defense. So they're just easy targets for attacks. Really, looting, means of extortion, obtaining money through abduction, kidnapping, and really bully boys simply wanting to throw their weight around and show who's boss in the local neighborhood.
This is certainly a shift from the era of Saddam, and of course we've seen this shift happening over a period of time. This is not new news, what's happening to Christians. Have there been no measures taken for law and order or to help the plight of Christians? Surely their Muslim neighbors are aware of their plight, yes?
They most certainly are. And Archbishop Louis Sacco from Kirkuk, who has spoken most fluently on this subject for many years now, has been at the forefront of efforts to mobilize the Muslim community to work alongside their Christian brothers and sisters, recognizing, of course, that in former years the two communities did work alongside one another quite adequately. But the main reason why the Muslim community doesn't seem to be able to prevent further attacks against the Christians is because of the breakdown of law and order. This is a point made clear by Archbishop Louis Sacco again and again, that it's always the case in society that you can, the test case for security in any given situation, country, is how the minority groups are treated. And here we can see in Iraq that the bottom of the pile community, namely the Christians, are the ones who are being attacked, and therefore you can tell from that that security has broken down.
Is this since the U.S. have begun pulling troops out, and is there anything that the parliament or the government is doing to rectify the situation?
Yes, it has a lot to do with the fact that the Western powers, the U.S., the U.K., and other communities involved in the protection of Iraq have now begun their withdrawal under intense pressure to do so. And Archbishop Sacco himself has spoken out against this, not because he feels that it's an ideal situation to have Western foreign powers resident there, acting as a security system. It smacks to them in Iraq of colonialism, even if it isn't that. But the problem is that there's no security substitute. There isn't the power of any security system there to prevent law and order breakdown in the way that we have seen. And indeed, the power politics has broken down so far into factionalism, so that no one community power system has authority, which is in marked contrast to what we saw in the Sturm years, where no one was any doubt as to who was in charge. Now it's anyone's guess as to who really is in charge in any one particular area.
My understanding of the Constitution is that there are actually no provisions made for minorities. Is that correct?
It's not actually correct, but it's sadly very ambiguous. The Constitution that was signed or ratified in 2005 made clear that Iraq is a place which recognizes the rights of all religious groups. But significantly, in the next clause of the Constitution, it indicates that Islam and the Sharia are to be seen as the basis of law. And that would indicate that there is not an equality of religious expression. And indeed, there is a weighting towards protection given to Muslims over non-Muslims, and that therefore their credibility, their importance in the court of law is very manifest and far prevails over the Christian and other minority groups. That is severely, at a legal level, severely undermined the Christians' position.
Given this, and you also mentioned the economic situation, what is the recourse for Christians in the country now? What is their, you said they're leaving in droves. Do you have any idea of what numbers we have left there? And what would a future look like without Christians in Iraq?
Well, no one really has been able to say for certain what the situation is, re-numbers in Iraq, because we're dealing in a situation of flux with people on the move, and where, of course, for security reasons, it's impossible really to do an adequate survey. But Archbishop Sacco, in this interview I had with him, gave up-to-date figures. This is a man who can be relied upon to give an accurate, an accurate approach to this matter. And he's now saying that there are less than 400,000 Christians in Iraq, which is about 750,000 down on 1999. And you have to recognize also that within that 400,000, you have a large group who are not in their home. They are living in displacement camps or living away from home in some shape or form. And also, B, a good number of those are desperate to leave. And I myself have been to Iraq about a year ago. And at that time, we found countless people who were desperate to get to the West, get away from Iraq at all costs. So the numbers are tragic, but they themselves don't actually point to the severity of the situation. Iraq used to have 1.4 million Christians in it in the last census that was taken in 1987. It's now down to 400,000. That's bleak enough. But the figures themselves don't show quite how serious the situation is concerning the destabilization of the Christian community. We can see that their position politically has been very considerably weakened, and that their position legally, as we've discussed, that too has been undermined, and their position socially has also been under threat, because, as Bishop Sacco says, a good number of these Christians are struggling to get basic jobs, and these communities are often the better educated ones. Christians have made as they do in so many countries, they make a particular focus on education, and even though many of them are better qualified than their Muslim brothers and sisters, they're still struggling to get jobs. So that you've got all the indications of a crisis.
John Pontifex is head of press and information for the UK-based agency Aid to the Church in Need. Tuesday, September 1st, the Church in Italy celebrates the Day for the Preservation of Creation. Pope Benedict made a point of remembering this special event at the weekend Sunday Angelus at the papal summer residence of Castel Gandolfo outside Rome. This year's event focuses on air, an indispensable element for life.
Martedì prossimo, 1 settembre, si celebrerà in Italia la giornata per la salvaguardia del creato.
Pope Benedict called it a significant event of ecumenical importance. I call everyone to a greater commitment to the safeguarding of creation, gift of God, the Holy Father said, repeating his message from the previous Wednesday's general audience. The Holy Father encouraged industrialized countries to cooperate responsibly for the future of the planet so that the poorest populations do not pay the greatest price for climatic changes.
The increased amounts of methane and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere are acting to warm the surface.
Dr. Jonathan Shanklin is a meteorologist at the British Antarctic Survey. He says the effects of greenhouse gases remain a very big concern for the Earth's atmosphere and environment.
And while some areas of the Earth will undoubtedly benefit from this warming, other areas will not. And on balance, there are going to be far more people that have a negative effect, particularly those that live in low-lying coastal areas where there will be increased flooding, particularly from tidal surges and the like. And it's many of these people who are least able to save themselves, as it were, because many of the poorest countries of the world, such as Bangladesh, there's nowhere else to go.
In many ways, we are sleepwalking, it seems to me, into disaster.
Northern Ireland's Cardinal Cal Daly of Armagh says we need to wake up and tackle a global emergency as our planet gets warmer and warmer. We are emitting too many toxic chemicals into the atmosphere, he says, and that has got to stop.
That, in turn, is leading to increasing the hole in the ozone layer. I think the evidence there is too long-standing and coming from highly specialized people to be ignored, and we are ignoring it.
Now, some people say, well, I won't be here to see the worst effects of global warming or what happens to the ozone. It doesn't make any difference to me. But do we have the luxury of thinking that way?
We certainly do not, and above all, as Christians, we do not. For a long time, we have been warned by our Lord not to repeat the cant of Cain, am I my brother's keeper? We are our brother's keepers. We are the keepers of the planet by divine mandate. Our Lord has mandated us and commanded us to till the earth and take care of it. And we now know that the Earth includes the whole of the Earth's environment. There is an ecosystem. There are systems of ecosystems, and they are all coherent, interlinked, and effect on one has a ripple effect over the whole system. And we are responsible for that system. And we are the people who are creating the greatest threat to the planet. And that's at every level. The extinction of species after species of creatures who will never, ever be repeated again. And rare and precious species like the elephants who are being exterminated for sheer human greed. The greed to possess ivory. Greed is at the root of a very large number of these problems. Greed for increased profits, greed for increased gold, greed for more ownership of oil and access to oil, all of these things are an indication that fundamentally the problem is a moral one. And how can Christians ignore it?
So you're saying that we have, as Christians, a moral obligation to protect the environment, and that naturally includes the ozone, as you're saying. But does that mean that for the Catholic Church, it's a sin not to do everything possible to protect the world we live in?
It is, of course. And Pope John Paul has emphasized the moral aspect of it and the sin aspect of it very strongly in many pronouncements, and most notably in 1990 in his wonderful statement, "At peace with God, at peace with the whole of creation." Care of the planet is a basic Christian duty.
Now, in your book, The Minding of the Planet Earth, you challenge what over decades and perhaps centuries has really become conventional thought, that religion and science don't mix. After all, the church condemned Galileo. Today, the church is dealing with questions, moral questions concerning stem cell research, the genetic modification of food. They're evolving sciences today. Can religion and science mix, or does one necessarily eliminate the other?
Not only can they, but they must, for the mutual good of both. They are parallel and complementary ways of seeking truth, but they're each to do with the seeking of truth, and having a religious faith by no means excludes concern for scientific explanation and understanding. Even the Christian faith about creation, the creation of the planet and the creation of human beings, the direct creation by God of human beings, does not exclude, indeed it requires, scientific explanation of how the planet, the universe, and how human beings attain their present state. And we find that God, in fact, was using the processes of natural evolution in order to produce the kind of universe and the kind of planet and the kind of human species which we have at the present time. The how this came about does not exclude why it is at all, and only God is the ultimate and satisfying explanation of why there is a universe at all, when there might instead well have been nothing.
Where does it say then in the Bible that we do have a responsibility to take care of our planet?
There are two creation stories in Genesis placed side by side, and each of them revealed by God, and each of them therefore divinely inspired and part of divine faith. One has sometimes been misunderstood, and that is the first creation story, which commands the human being Adam to dominate the world, to subdue the world, till the earth and subdue it. And the subduing has sometimes, not in the Christian tradition, but by individual Christians perhaps, and people not of Christian faith, as a complete control of the earth, to do with it what we will. But that is supplemented and, if you like, corrected, balanced, by the second creation account, in which God places Adam in the garden with a mandate to till the earth and take care of it. And that taking care of it includes taking care also of farm animals and of, naturally by implication, all animal kind. Indeed, in Leviticus, we find that the divine commandment about keeping the Sabbath and keeping the Sabbath holy is intended also to give rest to the animals as well as to the human beings who work the earth. And in the story of Noah and the whole Noahic covenant which followed the flood, we find that God had care for all the humans, all the animal species, and required that two of each species, male and female, be saved from destruction by entering the ark along with human beings. So God has care also for the animals and for animal species, the very animal species that we are more and more exterminating without any hope ever of replacement.
Okay, well, what can we as individuals do to clean up our own acts, get our governments to be more conscientious about the environment?
I think that the whole abuse of the environment is caused by a phenomenon which has been called impatience with limits. It's a salutary fact that we seem to act in practice as if the resources of the universe were unlimited, and as if our power and right over them is unlimited, as if there were no moral limits and no material limits to what we can do with the resources of the earth. But we have no excuse for that kind of attitude anymore. The resources of the earth are limited. Moderation in lifestyle and a concern about willful, wanton waste, that these are matters which are anyway, I think, part of a truly Christian lifestyle. And also accompanying all that, concern for the poor. The world is increasingly divided into two blocks, a wealthy northern hemisphere and a poor and deprived southern hemisphere. And it's not just that these two exist side by side, but that the north takes the fundamental decisions which serve to make the South poor and to keep the South poor, because we determine very largely, unilaterally, the terms of trade on which we enter into commercial relations with the poor part of the world. And therefore, our policies, the policies that suit the rich North, are in fact also impoverishing the poor South. And that kind of state of affairs should not be. It morally is intolerable, but also militarily, strategically, and economically, it is in the end unsustainable. And the planet and its human inhabitants are the primary victims of all that.
And a warm thanks there to Northern Ireland's Cardinal Cal Daly of Armagh and author of the book The Minding of Planet Earth. Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.